Okay, we're back to Senior Talk Radio here at 88.1 FM, WCWP.org. I'm John Ryan, your host, and Iris Bunshaft is with me today. And we're very fortunate to have Ann Margaret Carosa, and we're talking elder law and estate planning and trusts, etc. Ann's number is 516-741-7870 for anybody who has a question. And I do always say that the town of North Hempstead doesn't endorse anybody, but we do our best to vet and bring on whom we feel are the best people to educate within the field.
And
so,
yes, very good. And perhaps today, Ann, you can tell us the difference between a revocable trust and an irrevocable trust.
Absolutely. We all know those two broad categories of trusts. Anyone who's ever been to a revocable trust or living trust seminar, you're given to think that they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. But a revocable trust, the appeal is psychological. I can put my assets into the trust. I can take my assets out of the trust. I'm my own trustee. Nothing really changed. But common sense tells us if nothing really changed, then are the assets in it protected in the event that I have to go to a nursing home at some point? And the answer is absolutely not. To the extent that the trust is revocable, the nursing home will ask me to go revoke the trust and pay for my own care. And when I'm down to exhaust fumes, we can explore Medicaid options. So the revocable trust is of very limited use. It does not protect us against estate taxes either. To the extent that I can get my little hands on the assets on the morning of my death, then the Internal Revenue Code says they're all subject to tax as part of my estate. On the other side of the continuum, we have a purely irrevocable trust. That's a very scary proposition because in a purely irrevocable trust, I retain no rights whatsoever. I put my asset into it. I have a trustee, and I cannot change the trustee. I have beneficiaries, and I cannot change the beneficiaries. It is never a good idea to do a purely irrevocable trust. Never a reason to do it. Where we want to be is somewhere in the middle of this continuum. If our goal is to protect assets vis-a-vis long-term care, and we know there's a five-year look-back period right now, then we want to look for an asset protection trust. It is technically irrevocable because I, acting alone, cannot get mad at the world and pull my assets back out of it. But I can go to the trustee and ask them to give me my assets back. And if I have drafted this trust properly, I will have retained the ability to remove and replace that trustee for any reason or no reason. That's a very important power, not only psychologically, but if I have the ability to remove and replace the trustee, then the trust qualifies under the Internal Revenue Code as a quote-unquote grantor trust so that it's disregarded for income tax purposes. So if I have my house in this asset protection trust, it will continue to get the star property tax exemption, my late husband's veterans exemption, and if I sell it during life, I will still be entitled to the $250,000 capital gains exclusion. So many, many different varieties of trusts out there. So you have to be very careful that you select the right one depending upon what your goals are.
And what about the look-back period?
The look-back period, if you want to get that running, then it would be the asset protection trust.
What you've just described.
Would choose. Yes. So I would start by placing my primary residence into the asset protection trust. I would probably not put my liquid assets in it. The retirement accounts are already protected by virtue of New York state law. They are invisible, whether it's a TDA, a 401k, an IRA, a 403b. Any retirement type account is invisible when we're applying for long-term care.
That's amazing. I just actually and jumping in here with a plug, this is a personal one versus the towns. I mean, we refer people to Ann because of this last little statement. You take your time and you're explaining the difference to people, and it's very important. You hear something, you go into an attorney and say, I heard about this XYZ trust and I want to protect myself. They're just going to do it. That's what you wanted. But it didn't really do the whole job. Mm. You need somebody you're going to sit down with and say, what are you trying to do out of this? What do you want to accomplish? Do you want some ability down the road to possibly change something? And if not, Ann brings it to their attention. Like, what is today doesn't have to be 2 years from now. Life changes for everybody.
Is there much change in the law regarding trusts?
Well, there are many, many changes regarding the estate tax thresholds. So that is going to cause us to choose one type of trust over another. New York's estate tax threshold was stuck at $1 million for about 15 years. It recently went to $2 million last year, and now it's $3.125. So that is going to help us determine what type of trust we need. And if we've drafted flexibility within the documents, including the trusts, we can sort of amend them as life goes on and as the laws change.
So in other words, if there is some benefit, say, in a trust that was done 5 years ago, whatever, that would not be grandfathered into the present
law? Well, sometimes, let me give you an example. Sometimes with trusts, we have to pick our poison. Under today's law, if we have an estate of $5 million, we're not paying any federal estate tax because that threshold is 5.4. The New York threshold, however, is 3.125 million. So with a $5 million estate, I need to determine whether my family would prefer to pay the New York estate tax on the difference between 3.125 and 5, or should I make a transfer of that excess into an estate tax trust, which will have the effect of removing those assets from my gross taxable estate. But the poison pill there is we're doing it with a carryover basis for capital gains. So if I had made the same analysis 3 years ago when the New York State threshold was $1 million and I funded an estate tax threshold and took a capital gains hit, now that New York has relieved that low threshold and raised it to 3.125, I will want to unfund the estate tax trust that I did 3 years ago, because now I don't have to saddle my kids with a capital gains hit to avoid the New York State estate tax, because the law did that already. So you must have flexibility within the documents to be able to go back and tweak them.
How often does that have to be done?
Well, the answer is as often as the law changes, mm-hmm. or as often as your health changes. Mm-hmm. With the Asset Protection Trust, I mentioned a few minutes ago that I would only start by putting the house in it. So you have three categories of assets. You have the house, which is protected in the trust. You have the retirement accounts. They're protected by virtue of New York state law. The third category of assets, you leave it out, you cross your fingers, but you make sure that you have a power of attorney, that if I start looking a little green around the gills, my agent, under the power of attorney, will very quickly transfer that third category, those liquid assets, into my asset protection trust. And 1 month later, under New York state law, I will qualify for Medicaid home care. And most people, especially women, prefer to have their long-term care provided at home. Mm. When the only help I need is with activities of daily living, the non-glamorous functions of feeding, bathing, toileting, that care can often be provided at home.
Now, that's a lot to swallow, what you have just said, particularly someone who has no background in it. You know, someone who's older and who really doesn't have the savvy, because only not because of ignorance, but ignorance of the particular topic. How right. do you do this when you come into your office and there's so many more issues to cover other than the one that you have just described, which is complicated?
Well, you know, I think going back 20 years, which is when I started practicing. 20 years ago, people thought, I need a will, that's it, end of story. But today, I think it's a lot more complicated because we're living longer and we're aware of complexities within our family makeup. A simple will is not going to cut it if one of my three beneficiaries has a substance abuse issue, a gambling problem, they spend money like a drunken sailor, they're on their fourth marriage, they have a developmental disability, I'm in a second marriage. All of these little nuances or complexities are going to cause us to have trusts built into our documents. So where do you start? I think you want to educate yourselves as much as possible.
Can you make a few suggestions regarding that?
Go to presentations. Public libraries often have elder law and estate planning presentations. Any attorney you're thinking about working with, you should call them ahead of time. They're probably not going to be available to pick up the phone that moment, but they should get back to you within a day. And it's a very personal collaboration between you and the attorney, so you want to make sure that there's a fit, that it's someone you're comfortable confiding in. You're going to be telling them about your daughter's drinking problem. You know, this is heavy stuff. You need to have trust and you need to feel like you're dealing with someone who knows what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, do you? Okay, the important thing is, you're listening here with Ann Margaret Croza, and I said, I have done business with Ann. She's the type of person who sits down and talks with you, and that's very important. You know, you can go to a seminar, and you can go to the library, and I've gone to presentations you've made, but it's very important then to take the next step. And it's worth it to sit down for an hour or so with the attorney, whatever the fee happens to be, you ask in advance, but get one-on-one instruction.
Absolutely.
And then you think it over.
Absolutely, John.
But
can
it's
you do any of these seminars? Or this is your seminar?
Well, if you'll allow me, the Syosset Public Library, July 15th at 7 p.m., I will be doing a presentation.
Okay, now we have to hop. We're listening to 88.1. Ann Margaret, thank you so much for being here this morning, and we'll be right back.